Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, June the 28th, 179th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer, an all-around good guy. That's what the card says. Bill Damiano. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Brian.
Didn't know I could read that fine print.
Yeah,
there, did
that was you? That was good.
Yeah, okay. This afternoon, we'll get up to speed a little bit with some of the changes that are going on, certainly with the bad guys being pushed back to the home front. That's changed some stuff. Funding not being there.
That's changed some stuff. More people seeming wanting to have monitoring going on in their life. That's changed stuff. So we got a bunch of different things that we'll kick around this afternoon when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Damiano, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Lee Trevino. Actually, this book is kind of cool. Gary Eagles brought in a bunch of quotes. I recognize all these guys. So it's probably the old duffers. No. Quote, if you're caught on a golf course during a storm and afraid of lightning, hold up a one iron. Not even God can hit a one iron. Yeah. I would imagine you have a fair amount of, shall we say, characters that are either on staff or that you guys work with as customers that are kind of fun to work with. I mean, you know, the circumstances might not be the best, but you know, not to say that Lee Trevino's in the probation system, but somebody like that who just has, you know, they got a little giggle, a little fun. You know, the reason that they're a customer may not be what anybody wants, but pretty much regular guys. Do you have them in there?
We have a lot of regular people on probation and on supervision, and we have a lot of characters throughout the mix, both on staff and in the clientele. We try to hire people with good character. But the joy of the job is really seeing people that are, you know, ready and willing to change their behavior and let us assist them in reforming their lives. And that is the basic concept behind probation. Of course, the governor made things a whole lot more interesting last year with realignment, because now there are new versions of supervision for the county that aren't probation. They're mandatory supervision, they're parole light, or heavy, depends on your perspective, because the parolees don't see it as any lighter. In fact, they see it as a whole lot more onerous, because probation's more engaged with them, perhaps, than parole would have been.
Oh, so because the whole system is ratcheted up a couple steps, now they're being paid attention to a little bit more regularly than what someone in their situation might have been.
They're being
3-4 years ago.
Being paid attention to differently than the state would have. And they have their mission on parole, and they did a good job of returning people to custody when they violated their conditions of parole. But with the realignment changes, now pretty much keep people here locally. So not only are they discharged from prison to supervision here for the probation department, but when they violate, or parole violators, all do their time here in the county jail, with the exception of, you know, people with serious and violent felonies or third strikers, they would go back to prison for a parole violation.
Was there anything, Bill, for third strikers, but they were all, as you said, light rather than the heavy duty? Because I would think that there are some of those folks that probably are less, put society at less of a risk at home than some of the folks that you're having to deal with that were kicked back that might not have had three strikes. It may have been two in a check swing.
We get strikers. We get one and second strikers, first and second strikers on post-release community supervision. When the governor talked about low-level offenders, he was talking about for the current conviction only, not necessarily historical. And so we found that with the 150 plus people that have been released to Humboldt County on post-release community supervision, they have records that are, you know, some of them fairly extensive and also include, you know, pretty serious crimes like domestic violence and weapons crimes, great bodily injury, robbery, kidnapping.
But the last thing that they did was they stole a pizza.
The last thing they did might have been possession of methamphetamine. They got sent to prison and got released on that methamphetamine charge.
Is this realignment thing working?
I think it's too early to tell. I think that.
But you've got some roadside markers along the way, don't you?
Yeah. Well, we have some things that we're looking at. We certainly will need to slice and dice the data, but you have to remember that as soon as realignment took place, it turned basically the whole felony sentencing in criminal matters and stood it on its head because it changed how people serve time in prison and jail. It changed the credit structure. 60 to 70% of the people that Humboldt used to send to prison now get sentenced to jail time instead. So consequences are different. If you never go to prison, what's the motivation for doing well on probation is a question that now has a new answer. We'll have to see how that turns out. The whole system has changed. And besides that, realignment's been in effect only 9 months. The county, our county and many other counties in the state are still trying to ramp up for the services, developing day reporting centers and alternatives to detention programs, electronic monitoring, and so forth. And again, as I said, it's a different program for the what used to be parolees because now they have to get services in our community. And we're developing those. So substance abuse treatment and mental health treatment and employment training development as appropriate or vocational assistance. And these are predominantly pretty high-risk guys.
Oh, that's a good one to go on break with. KINS News and Information Time, it's 319.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Damiano. Bill, before the break, you said high-risk guys. Kind of as the last phrase before we heard what was going on out there in the business community. Okay, high-risk guys to do really bad stuff, high-risk guys to go back into the system, high-risk guys, what do you mean?
High-risk guys to be involved in another criminal act. So we use an assessment tool that's an actuarial tool based on scientific study that allows us to look at certain characteristics that are static, like age at first conviction or adjudication, types of crimes, and so forth, and the number of felonies that they get, performance on prior supervision, and then it looks at dynamic factors as well, things that change over time. So substance abuse, mental health, work, education, things that are flexible and can actually get better. So protective factors, if you will.
Now, when we talk to educators, they say, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and they can predict pretty well first, second, third grade who's going to have the likelihood of needing your services down the road. Can you go into that same classroom
and maybe blindfolded and say, okay, everybody who does, and you pick off four or five of those primary lifestyle or cultural settings, excuse everybody else, and those kids that are left in the room have a very strong likelihood of having interaction with law enforcement somewhere down the road.
It's not a perfect science. I mean, you could do that. That isn't probably the best way to assess risk to do a criminal act. The best predictor of criminal behavior, future criminal behavior, is past criminal behavior. So if they hadn't ever been involved in the system, it would be difficult to predict. As you know, my department deals with both adults and juveniles on supervision. Juveniles aren't criminals, they're delinquents, and they call them delinquents and treat them differently because they can change. And in fact, the science shows us that a majority of youth who come into contact with the juvenile justice system will age out of the system and fly straight the rest of their life. There is a small percentage that continue to get deeper and deeper enmeshed in the system, and they do have some of those characteristics you're talking about, whether it's dysfunctional family, usually criminal family members, antisocial beliefs and patterns that are shared with them and they incorporate into their lives. But certainly not all youth that are raised in criminal families and not all youth that are raised by substance abusing parents or mentally ill parents become involved in our system. In fact, we see a lot of kids that are quite resilient and avoid the system because of what they observe.
What about spirituality? If there is a family culture of faith, religion, does that enter into this at all, or are there more modeled behaviors that really tend to take a kid to the edge for that first event?
I think the things that play the heaviest in the scientific tools that we use, the instruments that we use to assess people, are things like hanging out with antisocial peers, antisocial cognitions, justifying behavior, things like that, criminal associates and behavior. Those are the highest. A lot of people would assume that substance abuse would play up there really high, when in fact it's not as high a predictor of future criminal behavior. It's certainly a predictor of drug-seeking behavior, but not necessarily criminal behavior.
So being a liar is more of a predictor of being a criminal than being a drug user?
Yeah, it's kind of oversimplified,
yeah.
But
well, I'm trying to get it down to management level here.
And again, I think that's okay. It's more the static factors that are the best predictors. The kid that got busted for a serious crime and adjudicated at the age of 15 is more likely to stay involved in the system if he's got a serious offense.
But what tips him at 14 or at 16?
I don't know. I can't say that. I don't think that you can predict. I mean, we have tools for both the adult and the juvenile system, and they're based on science. They're not perfect predictors by any means. And what they do is they give us, you know, an assessment, you know, kind of a ballpark that has some variability to it. Obviously, nothing can be a perfect predictor. Humans are much too complex to predict what they're going to do.
Do you see parallels in white-collar crime and versus blue-collar crime?
Don't see a lot of white-collar crime in Humboldt County.
Right. Well, I was presuming you were looking at national or statewide averages.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. We just need more white collars.
There you go. Not enough white collars in Humboldt.
There you go. Yeah, we hear that from every walk of life. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lampus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer Bill Damiano. Bill, you've got some statistics. You mentioned that the current definition of what probation's responsibilities are has been in effect for about 9 months. I would have anticipated after about 3 weeks, you would have had a bunch of your probation guys walking around stooped because of the additional load on their shoulders, just as the numbers started coming through, the new ways of doing things, the new systems you were alluding to earlier. Has it worked out in that fashion?
Actually not. Our department was pretty well situated, I think, to take on realignment. We've been working on educating our staff, new skills, new tools, new interventions for offenders. Our risk assessment tool, for instance, is a few years old. Most of the offenders that are coming to us are familiar to us. We've seen them before. In fact, a lot of them failed out of the probation system previously, so it's not like they're totally unknown. We have experience with them. They have experience with us.
Does that make it easier or more challenging?
Well, I think that one of the challenges is the people coming out of prison are a different character than the people that we send to prison. People who have been incarcerated in state prison, they're removed from all of their, you know, social supports, their family and the community, regardless of how antisocial your family may be or screwed up your family may be, they are a support to you. So you send them off to an institution somewhere else in the state, many of them in Southern California, and have them learn a whole new bunch of rules and behaviors in that environment, and then return them to the community. It's a little different than working with somebody who is on felony probation, who just goes to jail for a period of time. They can still have visits with their family, and we can exit them from the jail, hand carry them across the street to our office and make sure they have a successful transition. Whereas we've got these PRCS, or post-release community supervision cases that are coming out. They get a bus ticket and some gate money when they're released from prison, and it's up to them to show up here. So there's already a period of time between the gate and our office where anything can happen, and you can imagine what kinds of things people will do when they've been incarcerated for months or years. First things they're going to do with that $200 might be, oh, I'm going to go have a cigarette, maybe a beer, who knows? You can use your imagination.
Do they have a time frame?
They're supposed to show up.
Report?
Yeah, they're supposed to show up immediately. So get here within a day or two and report to our offices.
So when these folks come back to where they came from, I would think that they would be the ones that would get most of the tender loving care out of your office and from the police department in their jurisdiction, and everybody else, because they have learned a new set of rules. And those rules aren't necessarily the rules that the rest of us are playing by. Is there a process to reacclimate them into their community, or is it dropped off at the doorstep and 9 out of 10 times they're going to be hanging out with the guys that got them in the spot that sent them off last time?
It's undoubtedly a difficult scenario for folks coming out of prison. I mean, they certainly have things working against them to get a job unless they know somebody who's promised them one already. If they're tattooed up, you know, up to their earlobes, and they may have some additional challenges. We created a model here. Our Community Corrections Partnership Executive Committee put together, I think, a really good plan to deal with them by using a day reporting center. It's not a report every day center. It's a center where services are located, or a combination of alcohol and drug, mental health, cognitive behavioral groups. We have a vocational counselor on site. We have a med nurse on site and psychiatric doctor or staff that can come on site. to work with these offenders to try and help get them situated right away. We have funding that we've approved for supportive services like clean and sober housing, detoxification if that's necessary, residential drug treatment. So we're really doing everything that we can to get them set up and stabilized in the community to make that transition, Brian. So,
do most of them want it, Bill?
Want? I don't know that most of them want
we'll
it.
We'll reach out for it.
We've been surprised by a few things. We were expecting 20% of these guys not even to show up at the door, and in fact, it's been much lower than that. So we've been quite satisfied that they make it to our door to begin with. I think that that shows promise. Down the road, it's going to look different because eventually we're going to run out of people who are doing prison time that are these non-offenders, and it's only going to be people sentenced locally. We'll be having people that have never seen prison before that'll be coming out for split sentences. And
so I would think that paints a better scenario.
It should be better. It should be better as long as we have the supports and services in the community to meet them. Earlier, I think at the beginning of the show, you mentioned, you know, the impacts of budgets. Well, we have state budgets and county budgets, and for the last 4 years, county departments have taken cuts. In my department, that's meant loss of probation officers at the same time that numbers of probationers, particularly in the adult system, are on the rise. So I have fewer staff to deal with more offenders. And now with PRCS, the only good aspect of it is that it did actually come with money, although it's not protected money. It's not constitutionally protected. If the legislature next year, or even after November, if this governor's initiative fails, if legislators feel that child care is more important or CalWORKs is more important than protecting the community and supervising these high-risk offenders in the community, then they can shift that money over into other social programs.
I would imagine there'd be a little blowback on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it did provide us some money, at least initially, which I'm grateful for because it's allowed us to put those services in place for these guys.
KINS, News and Information Times, 342. We'll be back with more from Bill Damiano.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill Damiano. Bill, you mentioned the numbers, the fact that your population has increased.
Yes.
That your staff, at best, has been treading water, if not being reduced. There are some new gadgets, I'm sure, that are available if you can afford to purchase them. What is the scenario now for Humboldt County? You know, we knock on the door and say, Bill, how's it going, man? What do we hear?
Well, it depends on who you are. If you're coming to the probation department as a felon on formal probation, we'll be assessing your case and determining what level of supervision you're going to get based on that risk to reoffend number, that risk score that we're going to give you. Lower-risk people are going to get less supervision. High-risk people are going to get the most supervision. Just the only way that I can assess my staff and distribute them, to the highest risk to protect the community.
Based on recidivism or on the magnitude of the crime?
Likelihood to recidivate, and we do have a couple of exceptions for type of crime. Sex offenders, if we have them on the caseload, we're going to watch them pretty seriously. People with significant violence in their background, we're going to watch them. They already have demonstrated the propensity for violence. The post-release community supervision folks and locally sentenced folks tend to be high risk. My normal probation population is about a third high risk offenders. Whereas post-release community supervision and these mandatory supervision cases, the split sentence that was developed by realignment, end up being about 80% high-risk offenders.
So keep it on your toes.
So we have, yeah, fortunately, the funding at this point to assign them to caseloads, you know, that are relatively manageable. They're very active cases. I mean, if you got somebody that's, you know, going on a spree, and we do have those, they'll keep you very busy.
As you look at the dynamics of the population at this point, and knowing the geographic nature of the county, you know, it's not like we have a real tight population, so somebody might stumble on somebody else doing something. How much more inefficient by that nature is the department, just because there's so much land that's out there? So if somebody's in Blocksburg, it's a little bit further away than somebody who's two blocks down.
Well, a majority of the offenders that come to us from around the greater Bay region. So anything from Fortuna and Ferndale up to McKinleyville, they're pretty well concentrated there, and it might just be density of law enforcement that makes that happen. We do assign in our general field services for felony probation cases and juvenile probation cases. We assign based on geographic region so that the officers can become familiar with the law enforcement and the other social resources in the communities to help people succeed. Post-release community supervision, we don't have enough offenders at this point yet to really distribute them geographically. Yeah, you know, more condensed. But, you know, we may get there. Certainly with the changes, we're still trying to track the numbers and see what the trends are going to be.
What's the most exciting thing that you see right now with under this umbrella of realignment?
We have seen successes. Changes in the law actually allow us to terminate people from supervision at 6 months if they've been successful and they're employed and they're doing everything they need to do, they're testing clean and so forth. And we have had a handful of offenders already in the mere 9 months that we've gone that did that. They demonstrated that they could, you know, stick to a good program, and it looked like they were on the right track. At 12 months, you must terminate people. And I think some of the positive data that I'm seeing are that we have a lot of offenders that are keeping their noses clean, at least for that period of supervision, and they know just as well as we do that we must terminate them at 12 months. So it's an incentive. And I think that certainly there's a greater chance of long-term success if somebody can stay clean and sober and on the right track for 12 months. They can keep it going longer, and hopefully we can help give them some tools to make that more likely.
Always try to end it on a positive note. Thanks for coming by, Bill.
You're welcome. Thanks, Brian.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Bill Damiano. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.